episode of Ant and Big Red vs. the World. I am Big Red, as always.
And I am Average Ant, as always.
But not as always this week, we have a special guest. My good buddy Marcus over here played baseball with me on the Shoreline Dolphins. Still does, in fact, as I'm working my way back from a shoulder injury. Marcus has been holding down the front, just really dominating out there for the Fins and the NWACs.
Yeah, for sure. So, without further ado, let's have Marcus tell the people a little about himself.
Hey, everyone. I'm Marcus Notaboom. As Jake said, certified stand-in ace of the Shoreline Fins baseball staff. I've been playing baseball since before I could walk. I've been a fan of the Mariners for as long as I can remember, and I'm excited to be on today and just want to say thank you to Big Red and Ant for letting me help in their battle versus the world.
Yeah, dude. Hopefully you give us a little boost, man.
I'll do what I can, man.
We're kind of losing, dude.
Well, you know, I'm just here to help out the cause.
Absolutely, and we're happy to have you on. You say you love baseball, and I've been a Mariners fan for as long as they've been bad. But we'll get a little deeper into that. Marcus is mainly on here for some of that baseball expertise. We got a good Mariner segment today, or bad Mariner segment today, depending on how you kind of want to view their depressing second half to the season. But other than that, we got some big news, some big trade news on both the NFL and NBA front. So we're going to get a little bit into Josh Gordon and the crazy nonsense going on with Jimmy Butler and the Timberwolves. So without further ado, Ant, you want to get us started talking a little bit about Josh Gordon?
Yeah, so for everybody who doesn't know, Josh Gordon finally was able to play again for the Browns for a while. I think I didn't even have my license the last time he was playing in the NFL. So, yeah, he finally got over. He stayed off the weed. He got cleared, but now it's the Browns are parting ways with him, unfortunately. So, I don't know. They just ended up, like, it was the final straw, I guess. They were tired of waiting on him and waiting on him and waiting on him and waiting on him and waiting on him. So, they finally let him go. He ends up on the New England Patriots with one of the best quarterbacks, if not the best quarterback, to ever play the game. And so I'll let Big Red take it from here.
Yeah, so Josh Gordon, he showed up late to Saturday's meetings, practice, whatever they had going on the day before their game. And he had also injured his hamstring and at a promotional shoot the day before. So self-inflicted hamstring injury that was going to hold him out of the game. He shows up late on a Saturday. And there were some administrators that even said they saw him acting like he wasn't himself and some suspected some drug usage. I'm not really sure how much I believe that aspect of it. Simply because the Patriots were so willing to jump all over and trade for him. And they sent a fifth-round pick over to the Browns. So it's definitely, like you said, kind of the last straw. John Dorsey designed to part ways with Josh Gordon. I mean, they trusted him for a long time. They gave him a lot of opportunities, and he's just kind of burned them too many times. And with that, they said goodbye, Josh Gordon. It seemed to be respectable on both sides. Josh Gordon appreciated all the time they gave him, but the Browns are moving on. They're moving into better times, hopefully. Getting their first win last night on Thursday against the New York Jets. And how many days was it, Marcus?
635 days without a win and two loser parades.
So definitely celebrating in Cleveland. Probably felt like that win yesterday was almost as good as LeBron taking it home for him in 2015. That was probably the last time they had a real parade. But yeah, no. Josh Gordon is gone. The Browns are moving into a new era. So I guess we can talk a little bit about just the kind of player Josh Gordon was for the Browns and what he's probably going to be for the Patriots. Marcus, you know, you can say a little piece if you'd like.
Well, I mean, I think I'll be curious to see how much of his antics the Patriots are going to be willing to put up with. I mean, obviously, they picked him up pretty quick, so they see something that they think they can work with. But like Ant was saying, he was out for so long with the Browns. And with the kind of receivers that the Patriots have, and especially with a quarterback like Tom Brady, they don't have to hang on to him for that long because they can either, A, get a new receiver, or Tom Brady can just make the worst receiver in football acceptable. So I think he's either going to have to change kind of how he acts off the field to stay with the Patriots for the duration of the season, or he's just going to put up ridiculous numbers because Tom Brady is going to be Tom Brady, and he has the skill set to be great, as we've seen in the past.
Yeah, for sure. That was some pretty solid points right there. That kind of ties into something that I wrote down. I wrote down that he may not be the best fit in New England or for New England, and not necessarily football-wise, because, I mean, pretty much, like you said, Tom Brady can make any receiver at least decent. So he's definitely going to be able to ball out on the field with him, but where I don't see him being able to fit is the lifestyle and, like you said, antics that he's been getting into the last few years. So, yeah.
Yeah, Belichick is too much of like a drill sergeant in that sense. If he sees anything kind of like weakness off the field, he's just going to be like, well, that's fun. Bye. See ya. Have fun.
Yeah, I mean, so I kind of disagree. I mean, you guys are talking a little bit about kind of some risk factor, like in terms of Josh Gordon going there. I mean, the Patriots gave up a fifth-round pick, which, I mean, it's not bad, but, I mean, it's still valuable. And you can get good guys in the later rounds. But, I mean, I really see it as, I mean, kind of Mark has alluded to it a little bit. I mean, if they're not going to put up with his antics, Bill Belichick's just not going to. Josh Gordon shows up late, he's not playing. And so, I mean, to a degree, yes, there's risk in that. He's shown a history of the suspensions and drug use. He hasn't played more than half a season in 3 years. But in that same breath, the New England Patriots are going to be the New England Patriots, whether they have Josh Gordon or not. They're going to get Julian Edelman back soon. They will have a decent receiving core with Josh Gordon or without. But where the major, major upside is in the fact that Josh Gordon might be the best receiver that Tom Brady has had since Randy Moss.
Yeah, that's true. That's definitely something I was thinking, too.
Yeah, so if Josh Gordon plays, watch out. The Patriots' offense, with Julian Edelman in the slot, Josh Gordon as a deep threat, and Rob Gronkowski running seam routes in the middle, I mean, that's a scary offense.
Yeah.
I'm not worried.
I'm not worried about the play on the field. I'm more worried about off the field. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think, Jake, you actually made a really good point about Randy Moss, because he was a guy who, coming into New England, had a lot of issues with the Vikings. People were not happy with the way he was acting off the field and even on the field, and he came into New England and became kind of an icon there. So maybe the same thing will happen with Josh Gordon, where he'll come in and everything will be fixed, and he'll just be a dude for him.
I agree 100%. That's an excellent comparison. I think another aspect of this that makes it very little risk, low risk, high reward for the Patriots, I guess is what I'm trying to say, is the fact that the Patriots have a much more structured environment than the Browns do. The Browns have barely won hardly any games. Hugh Jackson, John Dorsey, Josh, you'll get better, buddy. Yeah. We'll be here. You know, you just, when you feel like it, you come catch the passes for us, huh? And so Josh says, okay, man, sick. I'll try and get better sometimes, but, they'll be there. But with the Patriots, it's not going to be like that. Bill Belichick is going to lay down the line. He's going to be like, look, buddy, this is your last stop. Mm-hmm. You either get on the train and ride it with us, or you're done. And so I think in that regard, that structured scenario could be exactly what Josh Gordon needs.
Yeah, for sure, no doubt. I like the Randy Moss comparison for another reason, too. Like, Randy Moss, throughout his career, was playing with a bunch of not completely trash quarterbacks, but
not Tom Brady.
I mean, definitely once he got with Tom Brady, he was definitely a lot more happy. So
yeah,
I feel like that could happen with Josh Gordon.
Yeah, absolutely, and you can definitely say that Josh Gordon was playing with trash quarterbacks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Brian, I can't remember the amount of shock on my face when I see Josh Gordon putting up 200 yards with Brian Hoyer. Sweet. Yeah, I don't know, but one way or another, Josh Gordon is now a member of the New England Patriots, and if you have him on your fantasy team, you are definitely, fingers crossed, he's going to play. I don't know about the rest of the AFC, though.
Yep, so I guess with Josh Gordon out of the way, we'll move on to definitely a sensitive topic for us. We'll be moving on to the Mariners, and more specifically, their collapse. And something that I instantly thought about when Jake texted me saying that we were going to have Marcus on was his tweet that I have it pulled up right now, where it's 16 things that have happened since the Mariners' last playoff game. And some of the stuff on this is crazy. Like number 7, the Iraq War started and ended.
Yeah.
Social media websites like MySpace, Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter weren't even invented. One personal one for me is my sister, who's a junior in high school, wasn't even born.
That's wild.
yeah, and Marcus said he graduated elementary, middle, and high school since the last time they made the playoffs. So with that intro, I'll let Marcus can take the first.
Well,
take
I mean,
on this.
Just to even update that list further, considering they're not going to make playoffs this year, it is now elementary, middle, high school, and a junior college. So list goes on. But for me, after that first half where they were just looking absolutely unstoppable, to see this collapse, I really pinpointed it to a few things. Probably the biggest for me personally was the pitching and how it hasn't existed for the second half. James Paxton, when he has pitched, he's only thrown 31 innings in the second half, and he has a 4.35 ERA. Felix has thrown more innings than Paxton and has a 6.22 ERA. Marco Gonzalez, a 6.59 ERA, and all three of those guys have had injuries in the second half. You have Wade LeBlanc, who has been the ace of our staff in the second half, with a 62.2 innings pitched and a 3.3 ERA, with Mike Leake close behind with the exact same amount of innings pitched and a 3.88 ERA. And so when you have guys like that having to carry your load, who are normally four or five guys in any other rotation, because guys who you were going to try and lean on have literally collapsed, it just doesn't add up to success. And then you have the very disappointing trades we made at the deadline with Zach Duke, Adam Warren, and Sam Tuvilela. I have no idea how to pronounce that last name,
but he does.
Yeah, but you have Zach Duke, who with the Mariners has an ERA close to 6. You have Adam Warren, whose ERA with the Mariners is over a point higher than it was with the Yankees. And then you have Tuvilela, who tore his ACL after 5 innings and is out for this year and a good part of next year. And so when it comes to the Mariners, their offense has definitely been slouching, there's no doubt about that. But the biggest thing for me is just our absolute lack of consistency or durability on the mound in the second half.
Yeah, I mean, Marcus, thank you for that. A lot of numbers. We definitely appreciate that. It gives a lot of foundation to these discussions. I've got to say I agree on a lot of it. The pitching side of it, yeah, it's incredibly disappointing that Paxton, Felix, Gonzalez, innings eaters have gotten hurt. And it's definitely disappointing to see Paxton again battle injuries. Now he's fighting pneumonia.
In summer. How does that happen?
And
yeah, he's Canadian, dude.
Big maple, but it's frustrating because he was having an excellent year. He was finally staying healthy, and then, of course, we collapse, and it seems like the foundations of what made us good in the first half collapsing around us as well. And Paxton, a 4-3-5, isn't terrible, but it's nothing near the low three something he had in the first half. And Gonzalez, I like Marco Gonzalez a lot. I think he's going to be a great player for us.
I agree.
So I kind of attribute a lot of his second half decline to just wear and tear through the full season. He's never pitched more than around 150 innings in an entire season, minor league or not. And he's coming off injury as well.
Yeah, and that's actually what I attribute his injury to, is just the absolute workload we've kind of put on him this year. I mean, like you were saying, this is essentially his first full year in a major league uniform, and we were like, hey, go out there and throw 200 innings for us, big guy, that'll go well. And I think part of it is because he's 26, he's kind of in his physical prime, and so the Mariners just kind of assumed that he could handle it. But, I mean, the Mariners have a track record of not developing guys properly or rushing guys to get to the show. Like, look at what happened with Drew Smyly. We really needed him in our rotation, and so he tore his shoulder. We tried to rush him back from a shoulder injury, and he blew out his elbow and never pitched for us. And so I think part of something that's never been addressed with the Mariners is our kind of trash training staff. Because if you look at the Mariners' injury rates compared to other teams, it's ridiculous how many even just little injuries we have that end up turning into big things. And so I think that if the Mariners really want to turn it around, one of the things they're going to have to do is reevaluate how they train and take care of their players.
Yeah, so I think the saddest thing for me, honestly, is that we finally had, like, a decent all-around team. Whenever the Mariners were not necessarily contending but were better for their standards, it was one thing or the other, like, the pitching was great, and the offense was trash, or the offense was trash, and the pitching was great. Or whatever. I don't remember. I think I just messed that up, but whatever.
Get the idea.
Vice versa. But the first half of the year, the pitching, especially led by James Paxton, wasn't elite, but it was serviceable. And serviceable is really all you need to ask for when your offense was doing what the Mariners' offense was doing the first half of the season. So, I mean, like Marcus was just saying, it's definitely injuries that kill us almost every year.
Every year. Pretty much
almost always injuries.
Yeah, I mean, I can't disagree. I mean, shoot, we used how many starters last year? Tied the MLB record or whatever it was.
Yep.
And I mean, all a product of injury. I want to say the Mariners are trying to move in the right direction. They hired several new faces in their training and development staff this offseason. But, I mean, unfortunately, I think the biggest thing is the personnel. In the pitching staff at least. Offensively, guys getting injured, I mean, that sucks. It's frustrating. Yeah. But pitching-wise, it's Jerry DePoto's scrapping together entire rotations. And he picks up 7 or 8 new possible starters for the year each year. He's done it the last couple. And, like, 90% of these guys are improving.
Yeah.
And so when they go out there and do well, like Marco Gonzalez, he forces your hand and you have to play.
Yeah.
When the Mariners are in the 9 games up on the A's or whatever in June, and Marco Gonzalez has pitched 5 straight starts of 1 run or less, he's on a 23-inning scoreless streak.
Yeah.
You can't... You're not thinking, this guy's coming off a serious injury and surgery. You're thinking, this is the best option our rotation has right now, so we got to play him. But a lot like you said, Anthony, I mean, in the first half, we were overall good.
Mm-hmm.
Everything was overall good. Offense was above average. Pitching was average to above average, anchored by Edwin Diaz, absolute monster, who was still having a good second half, by the way.
Amazing second half.
He's sitting with a 1.54 ERA and 41 Ks in 23 innings. But our team was anchored by that in the first half, and all the one-run wins, 21-9 in the first half, and now we're 36-21 overall, which is still good. But at the end of the day, when you're a team that is good because you do everything fairly well, nothing amazing, The Mariners' offense wasn't amazing. It was above average. Their pitching wasn't amazing. It was above average. The only amazing thing about the Mariners was Edwin Diaz. Mm-hmm. And when you're a team that does everything above averagely, as soon as one thing starts to suffer, even a little bit,
yeah.
it doesn't go from great to okay, and then you still make it in. It goes from average to bad. And all of a sudden, when your pitching's bad, your offense feels like it has to make up for it, so it's going to press. And then as soon as your offense struggles, your pitching feels like it has to make up for it, pressing again. And with the poor, poor acquisitions, like Marcus mentioned, of Zach Duke and Adam Warren, and, I mean, Tavali Lalila was an unfortunate injury, but...
I thought you played for Alabama.
It's just tough, as because in order to be a team that wins by doing things above average, you have to do them well all the time. And as soon as you lose one, you lose the game.
Yeah, I mean, kind of going off what you and Anna both said about our strong first half, looking at the stats from the first half, the Mariners had an entire lineup of people hitting above 250. We had 9 people hitting 260, actually, or above. But then, looking at the post-All-Star stats, we have 4 people hitting above 250. Yeah, 4 people hitting above 250 on our entire team who have significant at-bats. And when you have a kind of decline of that offensive caliber, along with the injury and strained pitching staff that we have, it basically becomes impossible to win ball games. I mean, the Mariners have a negative run differential this year. And so I think the fact that we're even playing as well as we are is still kind of a minor miracle.
15 over still.
Which is, I mean, incredible and gets us into the playoffs in almost any other division of baseball. But we're not bitter. It's okay.
I'm bitter.
Yeah, they are the... They're always talking about that run differential.
It's about the worst.
We're always like, it doesn't matter.
True.
We need
run A's,
differential.
They're not the A's. I don't want to talk about the A's ever.
Yeah, seriously.
The Angels have a +2 win one. God, what am I saying? A +2 run differential. And their record's 75 and 79. The Mariners are -38. And they are 15 games over 500.
Yeah. That's true.
Well, the Angels are cursed.
But yeah,
they're just
trash
in general.
Sorry,
so.
You go first.
I mean, I guess what I was gonna say, like when we took over the lead for the division, things definitely felt like it could actually happen this year, not necessarily win the division, because I don't think anybody who's living on planet Earth, would actually think the Mariners could win the division after such a long playoff drought, but it was definitely looking like the wild card was something that not necessarily that they could reach, but something that they can lead, you know? And they were doing that for a while, and
I will say, if anyone on the A's is listening to this podcast, please do us a favor, and if you're going to knock us out of the playoffs again this year, that's fine, but just make it past the first round. Because I'm so sick and tired of losing to the A's and then watching them get eliminated in the wild card game. So that's my one request. Just make it past the first round.
We all know the A's losing in the wild card to the Yankees, man.
True.
We all know.
It's going to happen.
But at least the Mariners didn't make the playoffs again.
Again. Nope.
Put Seattle on the map for something else besides...
we don't got nothing to worry about.
Nobody be watching the Seahawks anymore either.
Yeah, seriously, that's going to be a crazy season.
that is our heavy-hearted Mariners edition. There are bright spots. Edwin Diaz, Mitch Haniger, cornerstones to build around, but it's...
not much past that.
Another tough year. And so, from there, we're going to get into our last little segment. It's some real depth because it's quite a convoluted... just whole deal here. Is the Jimmy Butler controversy and trade request and all that nonsense going on in Minnesota. So, Ann, I'll let you get it started.
Alright, so I guess I'll start off by saying Jimmy Butler is one of my personal favorite players in the NBA. I just enjoy pretty much everything about him, how hard he plays, his heart, his integrity, his attitude, approach, everything to the game. I guess I'll take it back to Chicago, where he first requested a trade to get out of Chicago. He ended up with the Timberwolves. And a lot of people thought the Timberwolves were definitely going to be not necessarily contenders, but up there for who's got next. And it was definitely looking that way for a good part of the season. And then Jimmy Butler goes down with an injury, and the Timberwolves collapse.
They were like, the 3 seed before he went
collapse,
down.
Collapse. They made the playoff. Yeah, they were the 3 seed before he went down. And then when he came back, he put the team on his shoulders and was able to carry them in on the last game of the season, getting a win against the Nuggets. And so, obviously, Jimmy Butler being a guy who rose from nothing, he had to go to CC to play college ball. So he's been working tremendously hard his whole life. And he comes to a team where he doesn't necessarily think that everybody's like giving their all. So that's something that drove him out of Chicago, and it's what's driving him out of Minnesota, as he requested a trade to either go to the Nets, Knicks, and Clippers were his preferences on the trade. And so it was first blocked off that the Timberwolves weren't going to trade him, but as of a few hours ago, Jimmy Butler's on the trade block officially. So with that aside, I'll let one of you two take it from here.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's a lot of stuff to take in. Like you said, Jimmy Butler's oftentimes questioned the effort and just kind of drive of quite namely guys like Andrew Wiggins and Karl Anthony Towns. And Andrew Wiggins has already had issues with effort and things like that. So as bad as he is on defense, I'm not that surprised that Jimmy kind of wants to get out of there, especially with the somewhat documented kind of beef and maybe not dislike, but kind of lack of chemistry between Jimmy Butler and Karl Anthony Towns. Jimmy wants out. It's his, like you kind of said, he left the Bulls because of certain issues to kind of join the next level of the Bulls with Thibs again.
The Minnesota Bulls.
And I mean, ironically or almost predictably, Jimmy Butler wants to leave the Bulls again. I don't really blame him. The Timberwolves were terrible on defense without Jimmy Butler. Just horrible, and part of that was the ineptitude of Andrew Wiggins and Karl Anthony Towns. And, I mean, yes, they squeaked into the playoffs. Without Jimmy Butler, the Timberwolves are a bottom five team again. It was pretty evident when he went down that that's how it was going to go. Karl Anthony Towns will put up the big numbers, but without his defense, I think that's the biggest thing holding him back from kind of being like a Joel Embiid type force or like impactful kind of player like he is for the Sixers. But Cat's just not there yet for the Timberwolves, and Jimmy Butler knows this. In the prime of his career at 29, he wants to go somewhere where he can build around guys that he can make chemistry with or guys that he wants to bring in. Teams like the Nets, Knicks, Clippers are all going to have cap space to allow him to do that. Or in the Knicks' case, really the only team with an established superstar. Kristaps is young enough to be a huge buoy for Jimmy Butler. Definitely going to have better defense than Karl Anthony Towns. Those are the three teams he listed he'd sign an extension with if traded to. So obviously those are his preferred teams. He's looking to make the max amount of money he can, the 5 years, $190 million. He turned down the Timberwolves' offer last year for 4 years, $110. Now, I don't know if that's because, well, that was the max amount the Timberwolves could offer him at that time, but I don't know if that's because he wanted the more money, the bigger payout later, or if he just was super unsure about staying with the Timberwolves back then. Marcus, not sure how deeply you know into this topic, but you can say your piece.
Well, I mean, here is the one thing I will say. Jimmy Butler is clearly an incredibly high caliber player, and so I can understand the Timberwolves' initial kind of want to hang on to him, even when he was like, I want to be traded. But I think putting him on the trading block, even if it's going to kind of reset them, is a really smart move on their part, just because it doesn't matter how high caliber and high effort a player is, if they don't like where they're playing, you're not going to be getting the most out of them. And so the Timberwolves are probably going to pick up, you know, some really high round picks or some, you know, high name players for Jimmy. And so wherever he goes, I'm sure he's going to still be Jimmy Butler and still play, you know, the hardest he absolutely can and make a bigger impact on whatever team he is on, because he'll have more support. And the Timberwolves will benefit from it, just in the fact that they'll have kind of a new core to try and rebuild from again.
Yeah, so touching on the young core, this definitely, it's disintegrating, I guess, to the Timberwolves' immediate future. Their immediate future is done, like,
100%.
Point blank. Like, best case scenario, they trade Jimmy Butler immediately, get the most they can possibly for him, and miss the playoffs. Like, that's best case scenario in this situation. Worst case, obviously, they don't trade him. He doesn't resign. They don't get anything for him. But their immediate future is done. Karl-Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins can't carry that team at all. And their long-term future is also in question. I mean, Andrew Wiggins and Kat duo has proven that it's not something you could build around. Like, you could build around Kat for sure. He's still super young. He's gonna be one of the best centers in the game, if not already. But Andrew Wiggins is definitely not somebody you could build a championship future around. Like, it's simple as that. And not many teams are gonna want him after that fat extension you just signed him to. Like, if I'm in the Timberwolves front office, I don't know. Like, I can't look myself in the mirror after giving Andrew Wiggins that extension after
we promise you we'll put in more effort next year, Andrew. Am I gonna get $141 million? Only if you promise.
Yeah, what is that? I don't know. Like I said, they need to trade. Yeah. Jimmy Butler immediately. That's the only chance they have at getting something serviceable. If they're lucky, they'll end up similar to like the Pacers, where they get a hidden gem. And I wouldn't necessarily say Victor Oladipo's a hidden gem. He was kind of hidden behind Russell Westbrook, but a lot of people knew his potential. So best case scenario, they end up getting someone like that for their long-term future.
Yeah, I definitely like how you broke that up in the best-case scenario. I see it going... So I see the kind of trade going in, like, one of two ways, and one of them is better than the other. One way it could go is the Timberwolves already shown they're hesitant. It seems like Glenn Taylor, their owner, is less hesitant, as he's the one that's come out and say, we are trading Jimmy Butler. Talk to me. Call me directly if necessary. Because Thibs doesn't want to trade Jimmy Butler, and apparently their front office was telling people he wasn't available. But there's one of two ways they'll go, with some hesitancy. So they're going to trade Jimmy Butler with the misguided idea of, oh, we can still compete this year. You can't. You're in a loaded Western Conference that just got LeBron James. Pack it up. You're losing your best player. Karl-Anthony Towns has potential to be one of the best players in the league. He's not there yet. He can't play defense. Not yet. Like, you said it yourself, he's well on his way. I mean, not too long ago, he was voted as the number one player the league owners or franchise would like to build around. He still is that. But like you said, with the pairing with Andrew Wiggins, $140 million, you're not going to entice anybody to come play with a guy that doesn't give effort on defense, despite his incredible athleticism, and averages 14 points a game on, like, 38% shooting. I mean, that's the dude you gave, like, $140 million to? Because he said he was going to try harder?
Yeah. That's so fair.
It's the Timberwolves' fault for not asking for a pinky promise.
Yeah.
No, that's true. Honestly, if they pinky promised and kissed it, he definitely would have given them.
Shout out Andrew Wiggins for being so smart. I mean, I definitely would have signed the contract and nodded my head.
Yeah.
Smile and wave. But so they can go into it with hesitancy and believe that they can still make the playoffs with just some roster tweaks. So they'll trade Jimmy Butler to, in almost kind of like a Clippers sense, when they traded Blake Griffin to try and get back like spare parts to mingle together a competitive team. And so the Timberwolves could do something like that and say, we're not giving up yet. We're in the second year, third year of Andrew Wiggins' fatty contract. Karl Anthony Towns is still young. We can still do this. And they'll get spare parts and less picks. Less guys to build around. If they're lucky, they'll get a guy like Oladipo. I don't think they're going to. But if they take this route, they're taking larger contracts on, more veteran guys than youth movements and guys that'll just kind of prolong the rebuild, which I am a little scared that Tom Thibodeau is going to kind of push for, because he's not going to coach a rebuilding team. If the Timberwolves pack it all in, Thibodeau will be gone by the end of the season if he doesn't leave before then.
Tibbs, he's definitely on a hot seat too. He's supposed to be a defensive-minded coach, defensive genius. Yeah, he can't get his second best and third best players to play any sort of defense. Like, they're one of the worst defensive teams in the league last season. And you're supposed to be this defensive-minded coach. Like,
yeah, I mean, he's supposed to be a guy that led great Bulls defenses, and they bring him into a bunch of young guys that he's supposed to be able to mold. Well, he can't get any kind of defensive effort out of Andrew Wiggins. And Karl Anthony Towns is improving, but slightly. But, I mean, he is super young. And that's always going to be the caveat until he's not. then the other thing that the Timberwolves should do is what they actually should do, and the other option is do everything they can to get picks and young assets to just jump into rebuild mode. You're gonna have the bad contract of Andrew Wiggins for another year or two, but his athleticism will still put some fans in the seats. So will Karl Anthony Towns. So you play with Wiggins for another year or two with that contract, and hopefully he shows something that allows you to trade him. That would be ideal. But I think the Timberwolves just need to go right into rebuild mode. Karl Anthony Towns is definitely young enough to where, in the prime of his career, I kind of see the Timberwolves maybe as like a Pelicans kind of situation. Now, granted, the Pelicans definitely haven't made the most of their opportunities. I mean, the Jrue Holiday, DeMarcus Cousins was a big leap, a big question mark. Maybe could have been better. Maybe could have been different playoff results if DeMarcus Cousins was healthy. But Anthony Davis endured a lot of bad teams, and I think that's what Karl Anthony Towns is going to have to do. And if the Timberwolves play it right, they can start a real rebuild and actually build around like a prime 26-year-old Karl Anthony Towns.
I definitely think that going that route is probably what's best for them. But the one problem I have with it is how long is Cat willing to wait? You know what I mean? Like, he's definitely going to be able to get the most money in Minnesota. It's his first team. Players are less likely to leave the team that they're drafted to, at least for their first, like, big contract. There's no guarantee that he's going to stay, and that's my biggest worry for them.
Yeah, and that is a huge worry, but, I mean, the failed Jimmy Butler experiment puts the Timberwolves in a very difficult spot. And so, I mean, how this trade goes is going to dictate their future, and hopefully they can endear Karl Anthony Towns to the team that drafted him.
Yeah, for sure. And with the Timberwolves kind of out of the way, where do you think Jimmy Butler is going to end up?
It's tough, man. I quite frankly don't think he's going to end up on any of the teams that, I mean, this is just totally kind of random bold prediction. I don't think he's going to end up on any of the teams that he wants to go to. I think some fringe contender is going to throw up a little bit more assets than the Clippers or Knicks. I don't really know why he wants to go to the Nets, but a little more than they're going to offer. Kind of like how Kawhi ended up on Toronto out of nowhere. Same thing happened with Paul George to the Thunder out of nowhere. I think we're going to see a similar thing with Jimmy Butler. It's going to be a team that's going to jump up and take a big step and think Jimmy Butler's going to be the cog that puts him over the hump and into the finals contention, and hopefully they can get him to re-sign, just like the Raptors are hoping Kawhi Leonard re-signs.
Yeah, that's like exactly what I think. I definitely don't think he's going to end up with the Nets, Knicks, or Clippers unless it's as a free agent after next season. I definitely think it's going to end up very similar to the Kawhi Leonard. He's going to get traded out of the conference to a team that the Timberwolves don't really have any, they don't have to deal with them at all. So, I don't know, something that I would really like to see, I don't know how the contracts would match up and whatever, but I'd really like to see him with the Bucks. I think that would be super
they'd
cool.
They'd have to give up on Bledsoe, but I like that. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
I'd give up Bledsoe. Jimmy Butler bring and the secondary Jimmy offense Butler, from sure. Giannis? That sounds scary, all that length. Marcus, you got a prediction? You can just randomly pick a team.
I don't the Sonics know, man. Aren't a team lot of good players though. Go to Golden State, so for all we know, they're going to come out and just be like, how much more can we piss off the league? Just pick up this dude.
The Warriors trading Klay Thompson for Jimmy Butler.
They'll trade a... Nah, they'll trade like a six-pack of Coke. half a Jimmy John sandwich.
And then Jimmy Butler resigned for 5 years, $25 million, and... The Warriors will never lose again. all right, everybody. Well, thank you for tuning in to this episode. It was a pretty special one for us with our first guest appearance. Marcus, thanks a lot for coming out.
Well, I mean, thank you guys so much for having me. It's truly a great honor to be on this show, especially as the first guest. Oh, thank you, man.
Yeah, for sure. I think you rocked it, honestly.
Bring in your comments. Let us know how Marcus did. If it's making fun of him, definitely send it in. If it's compliments, I guess we'll read those too.
I have enough confidence to deal with that. Please don't make fun of me.
All right, thanks for listening, everybody.